Hello, welcome back to Talking Europe. Ukraine is continuing its ground offensive in Russia's Kursk region and pursuing drone attacks deep inside Russian territory, signalling a more assertive approach. Kyiv saying that it has a right to fight back and that it wouldn't have needed the incursion if Western countries had lifted their limits on Ukraine's use of long-range weapons. None of this, however, has prevented Russian forces from advancing in eastern Ukraine this summer. The goal there still clearly to capture the entire Donbass, if possible. Well, to discuss the situation, I'm joined by two MEPs, the newly elected Tobias Krämer from Germany, who's with the Socialists and Democrats. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Lithuanian Renew MP Petras Auštrevičius, who is a veteran of the European Parliament, and both of you actually on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Welcome to you as well, Petras.
Thank you. Let's
start with this offensive in Kursk. I guess there was a lot of excitement in the West when it first began, but as I said, there are also these quite significant Russian advances in eastern Ukraine. So was it a bit overblown, this offensive in Russia itself?
I mean, the offense in Kursk region, I mean, crossing the Ukrainian-Russian border, I think it was a big surprise, not just for Russians, but for many allies as well. For me, it illustrates the capacity of the Ukraine militaries and headquarters, I mean, to plan such big, large-scale operations. They have capacities, and they have probably achieved what they needed the most at that time, to divert attention, resources, and probably time from the eastern direction, where the Russian aggressors, I mean, concentrated huge amount of manpower and machinery, war machinery, going into the Pokrovsk direction, which is a strategically important city for Ukrainians. So that's why I think in this regard, Ukraine showed that its capacity to strike, indeed to plan. And what we see now that Russians have to, again, I mean, to bring resources from the eastern to a bit northern front line, what Ukrainians have established. So I believe, although it's, of course, it's a costly, it's risky, and I mean, an operation asking for more and more resources, I mean, to be placed over there. But I believe Ukraine shows its really increasing capacity and ability to fight Russians back.
Tobias Krämer, there's a debate now about whether the limits on the range of Western weapons that are delivered to Ukraine, whether those limits should be lifted. This has been a debate in the German government for a long time, hasn't it? And if Germany changed its position, that would probably make quite a big difference.
I actually think the debate has been much more about what weapons we deliver. At the moment, the question of taking away limitations of range is more really a question for the Americans and the Brits. And if they do what they seem to be doing, I very much support that. And we've actually passed on the 18th of June a resolution in the European Parliament with cross-party support that was actually calling for this removal of limitations. But I want to be very, very clear. One thing that we see is that missiles alone or these Wunderwaffen or whatever you would might call
Wonder
it, that's
weapons.
Not going to change the war. What is going to change the war is really the capability of Europe to provide the ammunition that is needed for Ukraine. I think we really have to focus on that because that's the main weakness that we also still have in Europe, that we cannot produce enough of ammunition that is desperately needed in Ukraine.
Well, I think it's obvious that the Western allies must produce and must supply to Ukraine and provide Ukraine with everything Ukraine needs. Ukraine needs not just tanks, jets, or, I mean, long-range artillery, long-range missiles as well, and probably something more. I mean, more mobility on the ground would be a great advantage for Ukrainian forces. So
you've also been tweeting, Petras Auštrevičius, about the remaining loopholes and, for example, the sales of oil tankers to the shadow Russian fleet. So
yes.
You're trying to draw attention to things that the EU is sort of letting fall by the wayside, in a sense?
Indeed. Look, I mean, with the sanctions policy, although it's unprecedented sanctions against Russia and its allies, or ally in particular Belarus, under the rule of Lukashenko. But, I mean, loopholes remain. if to follow statistics, straight statistic of single member states of European Union with Kyrgyzstan, which is hiking, like, whoa, going up, I mean, from very low level. I mean, and you start to wonder, what happened to Kyrgyzstan? I mean, have they exploded demographically speaking? I mean, is economy growing 10 times a year? I think, I mean, we are simply closing eyes, I mean, to such cases like shadow fleet bringing oil, I mean, Russian oil to third countries, and sometimes probably even to the European Union, as well as our trade relations with third countries, which really are allies of the Russian Federation.
I have to say, everything I'm hearing from both of you doesn't really seem to point to any peace talks anytime soon, but that is a theme that the German Chancellor has mentioned again. Olaf Scholz speaking after his meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Let's take a listen to Olaf Scholz now.
I think it's time for us to have a discussion about how we can get out of this war situation faster than current circumstances make us think. There will in any case be another peace conference, and the Ukrainian president and I agree that it should be with Russian participation.
What's your reaction to that, Tobias Kremer?
I think there's no contradiction at all. I think it's very, very clear what the Chancellor is saying there is that we want peace, and I can tell you, of course, we all want peace. But it's also the question, what sort of peace? And we don't want a peace of submission. We all know that peace without liberty is dictatorship. So we want a durable peace, sustainable peace, and a peace with freedom for Ukraine to determine its own future. But it is very clear that in order to have these negotiations for that both the Chancellor and Zelensky want. They want that conference. But it is very clear that, first of all, and that goes together with military strength. So the more we put Ukraine into a position of negotiating from strength, the more we put Ukraine into a position where Putin understands that he cannot win this war, the more likely it is that these conferences are successful. Currently, the main obstacle is really to make Putin understand that he will not win this war and that we will support Ukraine as long as it takes. I'm hopeful that he might understand that soon.
When Olaf Scholz says we can perhaps get to this situation, out of the war situation, faster than current circumstances make us think, it's quite a complex phrase. What did you really understand by that?
No, I think, like Olaf Scholz is somebody who thinks very in a very sophisticated way, and sometimes he also expresses himself as such. But this statement was made together with Zelensky, right. President Zelensky, and I think it's very clear that part of this, the same day, Germany announced that they're going to send another six howitzers. So I think it is very much in that direction that I just described, that the two go together. Military strength for Ukraine, support for Ukraine, go together with enforced emphasis into diplomacy. I'm a diplomat by profession before I joined Parliament, and I can tell you that diplomacy works well when you have the strength, like you have also military strength on your side. You need to create a rapport de force, come the French say, that is favourable for your position.
A balance of power. But on that balance of power, Petras, I mean, Russian industrial production is certainly continuing at a pretty substantial pace. What is the incentive for Putin to stop? I mean, he doesn't really have one, does he?
Well, I think Putin understands. I mean, his resources are really stretched. And I don't see Russia, having an ability probably to finance this war long term. I'm speaking as I hear from Kremlin. I mean, they are not ready for any peace. They're sending a message as we will invest into this war operation as long as we need. I mean, they to decide, I mean, how much resources and people will be sent to the battlefields. But, probably we have to depart from the old concept of peace. Sometimes we think that just signing a document with Russians, it's a peace deal. It's not. Look, I mean, we had a 2014, I mean, it started, then it was frozen by 22, and our side, I mean, the Western side, didn't prepare for, any military conflict exploding once again. As Russians, they did it. They did it. I mean, they've been investing, they've been modernizing their military capacities and so on and so forth. If we don't come up with the guarantees for Ukraine, if we do not really establish a clear red line for Russians with the, for example, NATO membership of Ukraine, with the EU membership for Ukraine, with the hopefully new working security system in Europe between West and the Russian Federation. So I don't think we will have a real peace deal with Russians.
Just one final point. We've got very little time, Tobias, but do you think any peace talks would show up fragmentation or divisions between the West on what territorial concessions might have to be made?
I think there would be a lot of speculation, but I think the West has been very much unified in very clearly saying Ukraine has the right to its territorial integrity and Ukraine negotiates that peace. And that has been very, very clear across the board in all our countries. And I think for us, this is, and I think just want to make this a very brief point. Mm-hmm. For us, this is not just a matter of like having a ceasefire in Ukraine. This is in some ways a conflict, a global conflict, whether we want to have the right of the stronger, the survival of the fittest, or whether we have the strength of the international law. And we want to have the strength of the international law. So it is very, very clear that these, if there is a peace, if there's a peace negotiation, that clearly mirrors that. We go back to an international rule-based international order, and I think that is that must be the priority. It is not just about Ukraine, it's about our security, and eventually it's about our prosperity and freedom in this world.
We'll wrap it there. Thank you so much to both of you, Tobias Kramer and Petras Austravicius. That's all for this episode of Talking Europe. Thanks for joining us.